Good afternoon. You are very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Brian Dowling. Labour's battle-weary rank-and-file gather in Killarney. The party leader, Eamon Gilmore, acknowledges they've endured difficult days since entering government, but he says better days lie ahead. So will economic recovery also bring about recovery in the party's political fortunes? Or will Labour have to do more to win back supporters who have deserted them? We'll be joined by ministers and TDs to discuss the challenges facing the party. First, the latest news headlines with John Finnerty. This is Saturday with Brian Dowling, and we welcome your views on any of the topics we cover. Here's how you can get in touch. You can text us on 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie, and our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today, Brendan Howland, Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, Rory Quinn, Minister for Education and Skills, Kathleen Lynch, Minister of State at the Department of Health, Arthur Spring, TD here in Kerry, and Pat Leahy, Deputy Editor of the Sunday Business Post. Now, a lot of the Labour Party delegates and party members have been talking about what the party needs to do to recover, and one of the options is to refresh the party's ministerial lineup. And there's been a lot of talk about a reshuffle next year. Arthur Spring, if Rory Quinn or Pat Rabbit or others were asked to step aside from ministerial positions, wouldn't that open up great prospects for a young TD like yourself?
Only if I was picked on the team would I be voting for it. But yes, of course, anyone that's ambitious would look to be a minister in a cabinet. But I'm under no illusions. Over the last 3 years, we've faced enormous difficulties. And in my opening speech in the Dáil, I welcomed the idea that there was some grey hair and some old shoes sitting under the cabinet table. It was such a turbulent time that I think you needed experience, you needed knowledge, and you needed glue rather than acid as well. And I think that Eamon Gilmore picked a team that has been proven to be correct in what they have done. Personally, I'm ambitious for my own political career, and I know that a lot of the Labour backbenchers are also. But there's a lot of road to go yet, and I'm not going to take my hand down or anything, but I still need these guys for certain projects in Kerry, so I wish them the best in their careers at the moment anyway.
Rory Quinn, Pat Rabbit says earlier on today that he intends running in the next election. Do you?
That's my intention, yes.
Is that a firm intention?
Well, look, it's 2.5 years out. I'm in very good health. I'm enjoying very much the job I'm doing. I'd like to get it finished. And, you know, that's the way I feel about it. I've been in politics effectively all my life and want to keep going.
And what if a cabinet reshuffle?
Well, look, we always knew at the very outset, both Brendan Howland and myself, because it was said to us and indeed said to the parliamentary party that after the European and local elections, which don't take place until next May, that there would be a review. I gather from an interview that Amy gave to one of the newspapers during the week, might have been to yours, Pat, that he hadn't spoken to the Taoiseach about this matter as yet. There has been no discussion, no conversation.
And looking at your own position, I mean, are you of a mind to volunteer?
Well, I've engaged in probably the most fundamental reform of education in probably 30 to 40 years, both with the literacy and numeracy strategy at primary level, the abolition of the junior certificate examination and the replacement of the whole new reform of junior cycle, the transformation of the landscape at higher level, both universities and institutes of technology, and the transformation of what was FOSS into SULIS, and the integration of 33 VECs into 16 education training boards. The work's only half started.
Brendan Howland, why do you seem to be immune from the speculation of moving?
Oh, I don't know why I'd be immune from speculation. Well, that probably was right at the start.
All the speculation seems to suggest that you're fine, you're sound, you'll be there.
Are you suggesting he leaked the story?
No. I think that there wouldn't be, certainly 2.5 years ago, a queue outside the door for my job. I was very honoured and privileged to get it.
I think there was a short queue.
But it's been an extraordinary, challenging period.
But you have become essentially the public face of the cutbacks.
I hope not. I hope I'm the public face for the Labour Party of the recovery, because we're on a path to recover the economy. There was difficult decisions, yeah, that were required on that road. But making those decisions is why all of us entered politics. We didn't enter politics to be measured on a day-by-day basis by our popularity. We could cheerlead, as you know, Fianna Fáil did in the worst of times. They could cheerlead popularity by giving out stuff all the time. Fixing an economy, bringing our expenditure and our income into kilter was hugely challenging. There's no doubt about it. It affected, and particularly in an economy that is so concentrated on social spend, 80% of everything we spend is on social welfare, health and education. And that's the way it should be. And we have fought might and main to protect the core essence of all of those. So core social welfare payments have been protected. The pupil-teacher ratio has been protected. And the school's building programs we provide for.
You've still lost substantial support since you went into government.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, we had a very good election, obviously, in the last general election in 2011, the best result we've ever had. And then we went in to do the most difficult, most challenging job ever given to a government. And we're well on the way to recovering towards that level. If you look at, for example, our local election result in 2009, we were between 13 and 14%. We're now at 12%. So we're knocking on the door of what we were in the last local elections. And I think there's a new feeling on the ground, not only among the Labour Party members, which you can see palpably around this conference centre, but across our constituencies. People, they don't like what we've had to do, but they respect us for having it done, and they now want to see what is our plan for the next phase. Recovering our economy was phase one. Having a different type of Ireland, a fairer, more inclusive Ireland, is phase two, and we have to spell out to the Irish people what we intend to do.
Just on that very point about the mood among party delegates, our reporter Louise Denver has been out to some 900 delegates attending the conference this weekend, and our reporter Louise Denver has been out talking to some of them, getting their views on where they see the party at and what they think the party needs to do. Here's her report.
The Naoibhín Eagla Party needs to stand up for its own principles in standing up against the policies of this government, which are imposing enormous suffering on the people of Ireland.
Do you think they need to apologise?
I personally believe they do, and I think they also need to apologise to party members.
There's a little element that Labour has been targeted by other parties because they see their vote as softer.
I think people will judge them on what they do, not what they said before the last election.
A lot of promises were made during the general election, and a lot of promises weren't fulfilled. People who are being polled who aren't supporting Labour anymore, do you think that they might deserve an apology in light of that?
I think everybody who had any sense knew that what was said before the election was going to go on to be in immediately afterwards.
We inherited a terrible economic mess after Fianna Fáil bankrupt this country.
There was too many promises made, really. It didn't work out as it should have, and they should have known that things were bad when they came into government.
And do you think it would hurt to say sorry now?
It depends now on the polls that be for them to say sorry. So, see how it pans out at the minute anyway.
Kathleen Lynch, what do you think Labour needs to do to regain the trust of those people who you have lost over the last 2.5, 3 years?
I thought you were going to ask me like your reporter has asked every delegate, do I think I should apologise? I mean, talk about leading questions. Could I just say that each and every one of us that were asked to take on the task of bringing about the recovery of this country, and whether that was in relation to health, education, social welfare, jobs, the economy in general, we knew it wasn't going to be a popularity contest. I mean, we inherited a country that was bankrupt and we're still living on borrowed money. And yet, when I meet people on the ground, who wants to live in a country where we've had to do what we've had to do? Now, this government is not about inflicting pain on people. It is about ensuring that there is a future for this economy and that there is a future for the people that live in this country. And that's what we've done. And I think that, you know, the mood has changed, most definitely has changed. And that mood has changed because people now realise that the economy is beginning to turn around and we have stabilised the economy. We've recovered our sovereignty, and I think people, despite the fact that they won't discuss it in any great detail, it was an issue that did concern them. And I still hear people, you know, like Fianna Fáil talking about, you know, that we didn't do this and we didn't do that. If Labour were in government at a time when we were awash with money, yes, we would have.
But you knew going into government you were not going to be awash with money.
And as I said at the very outset, we also knew there wasn't a popularity
contest. And going into that election, the Labour Party in the last 8-9 days ran a number of ads, which have been talked about. It.
Yes.
Every little hurts. This is what Fine Gael has in store for you. And if you take a few of the issues, for instance, dirt tax, the Labour Party was warning that Fine Gael would put that up to 30%. It's now 41%. The introduction of water charges, cuts in child benefit, a bottle of wine, a euro and a bottle of wine, it's actually 150. So for people who may have gone to the Labour Party for the first time, who took that at face value, What do you say to them now? Well, maybe you should say sorry to them, well, that you couldn't deliver those promises.
Look, the only thing that I'm sorry about is that we found ourselves in this position in the first place. And what I will say to those people is that in order to protect core values, in order to protect core payments and social welfare, in order to protect disability services, in order to ensure that our mental health services stay standing and are developed, that we had to make choices.
We didn't elect a Labour government. We had a platform.
But the ads actually were targeted at Fine Gael.
But the point about
The whole point of the ad was presumably to say to people that if Fine Gael are in government...
And we are different to Fine Gael.
That Labour in government would stop these things from happening.
What we said is if we have a Labour government, there's our platform, and we published an entire manifesto. Would the programme for government that we're now working be identical to the Labour manifesto? Of course not. We're a third of the government. But we made one overriding promise to the Irish people, which really transcends all else. And that is we would fix a broken economy and give people hope again. That's the driver, the promise that not only did we make solemnly, but we fulfilled. We've renegotiated the Troika
during
deal.
And that we have protected the most vulnerable, despite the fact that we were borrowing in order to do it. We have done that.
Pat Leahy, is the breach of trust as serious as some people might see it, or is it from the way some Labour ministers see it, that they had a job to do and they got on and started to do the job?
Well, there's no question that many people feel that they were that Labour has broken their promises. The research is quite clear on that. I think that is
not all of them.
No, not all of them, but a largeish chunk, perhaps up to half of the people who voted for Labour at the last election, have some hold that perception, and many more people who didn't vote for Labour at the last election, but who are still governed by them. But I think that perception of broken promises is there now. The question I think for Labour between now and the next election is to what extent people come to understand and forgive those broken promises, and the key driver in that process, I think, will be whether you have economic recovery. If there is economic recovery, and the indicators in recent times, not just the extremely good jobs figures that were published on Wednesday, but things like consumer confidence and that, and people will look at property prices as well, of course, tend to suggest that there is a recovery gathering pace. It is firm and it is underway. Now, if that manifests itself economically, it will have an effect on our politics. That is one of the laws of politics. And Labour is in a position, and that's why I think there's been in a position to benefit from that. And that's why I think there's been a change in mood in the party just in the last week or two with those with recent polls and the jobs numbers.
Yesterday, the party leader in Taoiseach, Eamon Gilmore, made a point that in line with economic recovery, there was a case to be made to ease the tax burden on families who have taken a big hit. Has the Labour Party any target in mind as to what kind of tax easing could take place? Where do you see this cutting in?
We recognise that an awful lot of people who feel that they pay for everything and get very little, who are coping with very difficult reductions in their standard of living as they see it, and they are. And they're the people upon whom this recovery is predicated. They're the people who, will generate the wealth as we go into the future and maintain the kind of slow but positive signs of recovery that Pat Leahy has just referred to. We believe that they have marched the long journey with us, and that at the first occasion when there is an opportunity to do it, when we don't put recovery at risk, then we'll be in a position to ease that burden upon that cohort of people.
Arthur Spring.
With all due deference to the ministers sitting at the table, I come from the generation that I call Generation Jinxed. We have felt the brunt of this. Many of my friends and family and colleagues have had to emigrate. But those of us stayed behind have dealt with the negative equity, the lack of jobs, the higher taxes, etc. And recovery is for the people. And I'm adamant that the people that should benefit most from the fruits of recovery are the generation that have taken the worst hit in this. And I speak to my parents' generation, and they say, look, we'd like to see things better for you. For example, promises that are kept when you look at all six-year-olds and younger than six-year-olds, they'll be getting free GP care. That's a wonderful thing to be able to give society.
There are those who would argue that scarce resources should have been better targeted.
That is a fantastic thing to have targeted, because if people are at home with children and they're wondering if they have the funds to fix a broken washing machine or a boiler, will they carry a child to the doctor? I would like to think that they should be able to, and that's part of the social democracy that I believe in. And we can also look at, if you look across the table here, you can look at Minister Kathleen Lynch, okay? The Magdalen laundries have been addressed. Promises have been kept. Rory Quinn is building schools. He's looking at giving children the option of renting books they can't afford, giving people uniforms.
Strategic investment fund.
Minister Howland is here. The Troika are leaving. Over 300,000 people taking on the universal social charge. And you're saying that we broke promises. The vast majority of what we're doing is actually putting Ireland into a better place.
Brendan Howland, on the taxation issue that Eamon Gilmore raised, where do you see the scope? Where do you think that the burden can be used on taxation?
The priority of the government for the last 2.5 years has been to get us ourselves out of the Troika programme, to work towards the deficit reduction so that we would have a deficit of less than 3% by 2015. We have implemented 260 particular actions on that road, many of them really difficult, and we're on target for that. When we emerge, and we are emerging, we want to see who really needs the first set of breaks, and they're the people who have taken it on the chin right through this crisis, who are working harder than they ever did, who are taking home less, who are paying more, and they need to be given a break. Hard-working families.
Is there even now, after nearly almost 3 years in government, is there a target for where that break might kick in?
Well, I mean, Arthur has listed some of the things we want to do.
No, particularly on taxation. A few days ago, for instance, the Taoiseach nailed his colours to the mast. He said he'd like to see unemployment falling below 10% by 2016.
Well, if you listen...
That's a target. It's a measurable target.
Well, the Taoiseach said that we actually have to have an ambitious target about unemployment, and we should have full employment by 2020. He said that 6 months ago.
But within the lifetime of this particular government.
Within the lifetime of this government. I mean, you talk about the figures. The unemployment rate now, as verified by the Central Statistics Office, is 12.6%. 1 month ago, the consensus among the economic forecasters was we wouldn't get to that figure for another 12 months. So the jobs benefit of the economic return is happening quicker than economic forecasters expected. And I expect that to happen. The more people, and it's the number one priority of the government, the more people we get back into work, the more taxes we have available for social supports, and the more people that can enjoy the spend and grow the domestic
economy. If you look at the so-called squeezed middle, for instance, some of the figures I was looking at recently are that the average earner, I think, at €33,000 thereabouts, the top marginal rate of 52% kicks in. Mm-hmm. If you look at the UK for, I think, 52%, it's €180,000. Mm-hmm. For that group of people, is that a target? To take people out of the top rate of marginal tax?
Well, if you look at income tax, we have the second most progressive income tax system. Let me finish the full point. In the OECD, that shouldn't be lost sight of. Mm-hmm. So the top 1%, paid 20% of taxes, the top 5% almost 40% of taxes. That's progressive. But if you look at a comparison, the one thing that strikes you as being out of kilter in Ireland is how quickly a worker gets into the marginal rate of tax. And that is something that should be looked at. There's no doubt about that. But all of this is predicated on getting our economy in kilter and ensuring that the recovery is sustained. That will be our priority.
For every person who comes out of the live register and back into work, the taxpayers saved 20,000. Joan Burton was able to save, going into next year, 150 million because of the reduction in unemployment. You were talking about a target of under 10%. If the progression continues, there is no reason why unemployment will be in single figures before the next general election.
Pat Leahy, is easing the tax burden, is that one of the keys to Labour perhaps recovering support?
Well, cutting taxes is never unpopular in my experience. You know, I don't think the problem for the government will be finding things to do with extra money if the budgetary situation eases. The problem, actually, and it is in some respects, I suppose, would be a welcome problem for government. The problem will be deciding which parts, whether whether you continue to cut spending, and there is a program of continuing to cut spending for the next 2 years. So whether to ease up on that or to ease up on to loosen up on the tax front sometimes. In a sense, these are the basic questions of politics, yes. The basic distributional questions of politics. They're also the things that will naturally divide Fine Gael and Labour. There is, I think, a danger, particularly for Labour, in that it will talk up the recovery. But that process, understandable politically though it may be, will fuel demands for the extra resources.
You and I know that the one thing that this crisis has given us is a vision to see that it's structural reform we need to be dealing with, yes, across a whole range. It's not just about, cutting back on certain issues, but it is about ensuring that structural reform takes place, and whether that's in health, education, right across a range of areas. And that type of structural reform is actually what will give us the stability into the future. And I think that's hugely important. I think that message is beginning to get through to people. It is beginning to get through to people that what we're talking about here is structural reform, while ensuring that the different needs of people, because they are going to change as we go forward, can be met.
Catherine
as well.
Catherine is right. We're not going back to the past. Whether it's in the incredible transformation in the public service that Brendan's engaged in, a whole host of things. Public procurement, for example, where we pay the same price for the same unit of commodity, whether it's a ream of paper in a primary school or in a semi-state organisation or in a civil service. We were paying different prices for the same product because there wasn't that coordination that Brenda has brought in. In education, the transformation in the system in terms of getting rid of rote learning and becoming ICT rich in the sort of curriculum. All these sort of things are being done. They were never looked at. I'm getting something very simple, Brian. We had 20% of our school kids in prefabs when I took on the job in opposition of education. We'll be down to less than 5% within a very short period of time. These were things in the height of the money that Fianna Fáil had. They still had the scandal of kids in prefabs.
I want to come to Brendan Helen. One of the areas that is still going to bedevil the government and the Labour Party is the whole health budget, and the expectations that it may be 600 million plus, it might be 1 billion plus. And if you look at some of the reports today, this letter from Tony O'Brien of the HSE, which suggests that the review of medical cards is against the advice coming from the HSE and the Department of Health. So has that really been driven? Has that been driven by your department? Are you the person driving the medical card review?
I'm responsible for public expenditure, and every line minister had to engage and agree on a budget, and the budget then was signed off constitutionally by the entire cabinet, and we all have collective responsibility for it. Now, bluntly, I think we're all fed up of idle speculation that we read, some planted. Today's speculation is apparently the HSE giving advice to the Department of Health. You'd imagine that they wouldn't have to write formally to advise each other, that they could talk to each other and work out plans, but I don't know. Bottom line is simply this. We have a budget that is agreed. Our recovery is predicated on us delivering on our budgetary targets. We're out of the Troika arrangement now, so there'll even be greater scrutiny on ensuring that we live within the budget. Now, I see all sort of speculative figures. The cash demand of the Department of Health in the budgetary process was of the order of 210 million euros. That's the cash reduction. I reduced that by giving an additional 150 million euro back, as I did to the Department of Social Protection when we reduced the full ask, if you remember, by 400 million, and taxation ask was reduced by a further 200 million. But there are pressures that are building up. So people talk about demand and then add up a sum. But the sum can be anything in additional costs. As you reprioritise within the health spend. And that's what's going on right now. Discussions within the HSE, within the Department of Health, and discussions with my department, mm-hmm. and in fact with the Taoiseach's department, to ensure that a rational, proper, well-funded, coherent plan is put in place that can sustain decent health services through next year. And that's what we're going to achieve.
OK, I'd like to thank our guests who've joined us so far for the first part of the show. Pat Leahy is staying with us. We'll be joined by more Labour Party guests, including Minister Alex White and Sean Sherlock. So stay with us after this short break. Thank you. You're very welcome back. We're joined now by Alex White, Minister of State at the Department of Health, Sean Sherlock, Minister of State at the Department of Enterprise, Brian McDowell, the Labour Party's national organiser, Ciara Conway, the party's TD for Waterford, and Pat Leahy is still with us. Now, before we headed down to Killarney for the party conference, I spoke with Richard Colwell, the Managing Director of Red Sea, and we asked him to look back at the polling the company has done over the last year and more to look at what's going on beneath the headline figures in Red Sea polling, and just to tell us where the Labour Party has travelled from the time of the general election up to where we are today. And this is what he had to say.
Well, I think the big gains were outside of Dublin. Dublin was their heartland all along, and I think they did well in Dublin and better in Dublin at the last election. But where the difference was made was actually starting to recruit people from outside of Dublin, areas like Munster, and also younger voters. They managed to persuade younger voters that they were worth an alternative.
In recent months, the party has had a series of bad polls. Which voters have deserted the Labour Party?
Well, it is in those areas again where you start to see that less loyal Labour voters starting to shift away again, particularly among younger voters. I mean, we see really drastic drops among 18 to 24-year-olds, you know, up at 19% at the last election, as low as 3% in one of our polls. Also outside Dublin, Munster again particularly lost quite heavily in those areas. But they have lost across the board. That's just where they've lost slightly more than in other areas.
If you look at, say, what people might call the squeeze middle, how have they performed there?
Again, they're down in the squeeze middle. And the slight difference for the Labour in our polls is, as you know, more recently they saw a little bit of a positive bounce. And what's happened with the squeeze middle is they haven't come back. So the guys they've lost in the squeeze middle are still not convinced that they should return to Labour. And that's a problem for them going forward.
And to look at the squeeze middle, who are we talking about here? What are the age groups? What's the socioeconomic group?
Well, particularly 35 to 54-year-olds. These are people who have families, have mortgages, you know, living in suburban areas, maybe slightly more down market. Those people are the kind of people that they've lost. And actually, men as well tend to be more likely to have lapsed as a Labour voter than women.
In that most recent poll, the Labour Party had an increase of 3% support, bringing them back to 12%. Is that merely a bounce from the announcement of exiting the bailout, or is there something more substantial beneath it?
I think there's two ways to look at that. The first is, of course, it was a little bit of a bounce. You know, it is only a 3% gain, so it's within margin of error. There was over 50% of the population who said that they thought the government had done a good job leaving the bailout. It suggested that there was room for Labour to win back the vote, even if that might have been a short-lived gain at this stage.
Does the Red Sea research shed any light at all on why people have withdrawn their support?
A little while ago, we did some work with the Sunday Business Post about reasons why people had switched away from the parties. And the key thing for Labour is all about trust and fairness. And so what that comes back to is these voters are very... They went to Labour because they felt that the party was fair in what it did. And what's happened is since then, there's a feeling that they haven't been fair. But not only that they haven't been fair, but that they haven't kept their promises. So they promised a lot of things in the run-up to the last election. But there's a lot of people in the first 2 years that feel that those promises haven't been kept. So unless they start to win back some ground on those promises and start to bring more fairness back in, they'll struggle to win that vote back.
OK, Ciara Conway, you're one of the party's new TDs. You're in Waterford. As you face into the next 2 years in the general election in 2016, what's your sense of what the party has to do?
I think there's definitely a sense that we've kind of reached a halfway point, literally and figuratively, in terms of where we're at as a country. I think a lot of difficult things had to be done. I mean, you know, it has been rehearsed and said by many. And I suppose particularly it's very evident in my own constituency where we do have high unemployment. But if you look at figures lately, there are now more jobs in the southeast than there were before we went into government. And they're the kinds of things that people want to see. And when people have money in their pockets, it has a bounce locally. It improves retail sales. And they're the kinds of things that we need to see more of happening. But other kinds of things as well that, you know, the Labour Party would have championed in opposition and have been able to see through. And these are things that mean something to people. The fact that we're going to have a referendum on marriage equality, you know, this is has a huge impact on lots of families all over the country. The fact that we were able to deal in 18 months with the Magdalen women who got their letters, their offers. Spoke with Sally Mulready here last night. She said, we were able to do in 18 months what Fianna Fáil couldn't do in 14 years. And we saw a huge amount of outpouring and what that meant to people in terms of fairness. And that's something I'm very proud of. And I think that's something that people have come to respect, that we have been able to deal with things that have been left lingering on cabinet ministers' shelves.
Brian McDowell, you're the party's national organiser. You're the person who has to plan for the local and the European elections next year. And if you go back to 2009, the Labour Party, I think, won 132 seats. You had a gain of, I think, 30-plus seats. Many of those councillors, those additional ones you gained, you've lost already, people who have left the party. I think some 20-plus councillors have left. So it's not exactly an ideal starting base.
Well, let's see where we are, Brian. Let me just deal with the next local elections. We'll be running between somewhere between 150 and 200 candidates across the country, from Tralee to Donegal, from Dublin to Galway. And we'll be running a lot of new first-time candidates. We'll be looking to hit the 33% mark at least for in gender for women candidates. And we will be running individual campaigns on the ground for each of those candidates. The Labour councillors, I am quite clear, are the hardest working councillors in the country. And the work they've done over the last term, over the last 5 years, over the last 10 years in their communities will stand them in good stead when they go out in the local elections.
But how do you overcome some of the difficulties that Richard Colwell pointed to there in terms of the perception of the party, in terms of trying to persuade people to come back to the party?
Well, if we look at the last opinion poll and plot where we are now to where we were in before the last local elections, we got 13.8% or thereabouts in the last local elections. We were on 12%. We're on 12% in the last opinion poll. So we're within striking distance of where we were from the last local elections. So let's put it into perspective. We will be running candidates, good, new, young candidates and experienced councillors across the country. We have individual campaigns working the ground. They have done in their own communities. They're embedded in their own communities. And I have no doubt in 2014 they will be rewarded on the doorsteps.
Alex White, in addition to the councillors who have left, the party has obviously lost some parliamentary party members, and we all know the likes of Colm Keaveney, Willie Penrose, Roisin Shorthall and others. Is the party better served, perhaps, that some of those people are now outside the party?
No, but I think the party is better served and the people of Ireland are better served by actually being in government and delivering on the policies that we have. I mean, what we do as politicians is, I mean, there's nothing dishonourable about being in opposition, but where you actually achieve your ends, not all of them, and if you're a third of the government, you're definitely not going to achieve everything you want, but where you achieve real change is in government. So what we say to the people at the next election after 5 years is, here's what we've done, here's what we've achieved. We're honest with people. We say, look, this is what we set out to do and this is what we achieved. And I think, look, we're the Labour Party and we have a shared vision as to, you know, the kind of society we want. But I'm prepared to accept, I mean, the polling tells you over and over again that people do vote largely in accordance with their own material interests. And they look to their own interests in terms of their financial situation, their material situation, their kids, their families, the schools, the health services. That's where they make their decisions politically in the end. So you can talk about sort of parties and brands and, you know, promises and so on. And maybe, you know, maybe before the last election we were over-optimistic in certain areas as to what could be done. Maybe we thought things could be done more quickly than it turned out it could. Maybe there was even a little bit of over-exuberance in relation to it.
In terms of some of the advertising that the party ran as well.
But that's the point is, you know, you can pour over that and pour over a particular ad until the cows come home. The real issue is what people will do in the next general election and next year in the local elections. They look to see what have they done, what have they achieved, and what are the other guys going to do, and what sort of a mess did they bring the country into.
Sean Sherlock, if you take the point that Alex is making there, but if you go back to 1997, for instance, when the Labour Party was in government, first with Fianna Fáil, then in the Rainbow Coalition, and when the party went into polling in 1997, the economy was in pretty good shape at that stage. It was booming. But the electorate didn't thank the Labour Party for that.
No,
but... So why would it be any different this time?
No, but I think history shows us that the Labour Party in government has always, when it has come out of government, has always performed exceptionally well in turning an economy around. And for some reason, yes, historically, that has been the case. But I like to think that I'm part of a new generation of politicians that will reverse that trend. And I think you have to put all of this into context, because the opening piece there was from our friend the pollster, and he spoke about the fact that, you know, there is a squeezed middle and men in particular are not coming back to the party. But we have nonetheless seen a jump of 3 percentage points. So as politicians, we have to be honest about that and take that with some degree of enthusiasm. Now, but you also have to balance, you have to look at the historical perspective here and think about the fact that we lost 250 5,000 jobs in this country in the 3 years prior to the last election. We're now beginning to reverse that trend. We have, you know, we were losing 1,600 jobs per week. We're now creating 1,200 jobs per week. And do you know why we're doing that? We're doing it because no longer are we putting all of our eggs into one construction basket.
I think people accept that there is progress on the jobs front, but that may not be sufficient for the Labour Party.
But the Labour Party are part of that. I'm a Minister of State in the Department of Enterprise and in the Department of Education. I'm working with people like Richard Bruton, my colleague in that department, to make sure that we put in place a sustainable set of policies, that we start investing into other areas such as energy, such as food, such as medical devices, and investing into a greater basket of goods that will sustain jobs. And if you sustain jobs in this, you know, proper policies that will sustain jobs, that's where the squeezed middle will begin to benefit in the upturn that is currently taking place.
Pat
and that's what the Labour Party is about.
Does the Labour Party actually need to essentially redefine itself, rebrand itself, to move itself back into a position where it might begin to get support anywhere near the 19% that it achieved in 2011?
I think for more than a year now, it has been a tactical goal of the Labour Party in government to emphasise their separateness, to emphasise their role in government, and to talk about the influence that Labour has on government policy. And that's why things like the X case legislation, the forthcoming referendum on same-sex marriage, will be identified as specifically Labour achievements in government, that they will be able to go to their natural constituency of support and say, were it not for Labour, these things would not have happened. Were Labour not in government, these things wouldn't have happened. I think it's a more difficult, notwithstanding the primacy of economic influence on the political landscape, I think it's a more difficult job to brand economic recovery as a specifically Labour achievement, partly because Fine Gael want to talk about that as well, but partly because of that, just let me finish the point, but partly because of a confusion in Labour's own narrative, because it is saying on the one hand, without us, austerity would be worse, but also that the austerity policies have delivered for government and have fixed the public finances.
Sean Sherlock,
isn't that a real point?
There's a danger for Labour that Fine Gael may actually get all the credit for the recovery.
And that is always the danger when you have two parties in government and when there is a smaller party, part of that, arrangement and that coalition, okay? But the key point here is that the story of the recovery of the economy is about, reforming, social protection, new labour activation measures through people like Joan Burton, but it's also on my side of the house in the Department of Enterprise about ensuring, for instance, that we maintain the level of foreign direct investment, that we maintain the corporate tax rate, that we are part of the R&D tax credit. 43% of job wins last year were attributable to the R&D tax credit. The Labour Party is very much part of the policy discussion and impact in relation to, for instance, female entrepreneurship, getting more women entrepreneurs into the economy. We're very much part of that story. So it's a two-party conversation in that sense.
Ciara Conway, much has been made about the fact that we exit the bailout next month on the 15th of December. But from the point of view of going around your own constituency and talking to people and canvassing, will that make an awful lot of difference to people on the ground? Or is that just a big conceptual idea that we'll exit the bailout, but that life won't actually change that much because there'll still be the same fiscal constraints by and large?
No, I think about if you revert back to when we did have, when the we heard the news and about Ireland having to go into receivership and it was in Hawke and the Troika were in town, the outpouring of grief and disbelief by the Irish people was a very tangible thing. And we're a proud country, and the people in Waterford they're as proud as the rest of them. And I think people are glad that we will be exiting the bailout. But I think you're right. We do have a job of work to do. As I said, I feel the second half is coming now. And we do have to start building on the kinds of groundwork that we've done, the kind of reform that's happening in social protection, the kinds of schemes that are been put in place by jobs, by Minister Bruton in jobs and innovation, but also the kinds of reform that are going on in education. Again, I go back, things the Labour Party have spoken about for years in opposition, the kind of reform that we're seeing Rory Quinn drive through in relation to the pluralism in the primary sector. They're the kinds of things we have spoken about for as long as I've been a member of the Labour Party.
Will that necessarily result in an increase in support for the party?
But I think they're the kinds of things that do attract people to the Labour Party. I know it's what attracted me to the Labour Party in the first place. And it's the kinds of things I've been talking about since I was in Labour Youth and on the Town Council and into the Dáil. And we have that opportunity now to do that. And I think, yes, exiting the bailout psychologically for us as politicians, for the people, I think it will and does mean something. People don't always grasp the ins and outs of it all, but I think as a people, as a nation, it's important.
Just on the issue about the bailout is interesting because, you know, I think that it's having a huge psychological effect across the country. And I'm surprised actually by this, the number of people who've said to me, because I agree with you about the, you know, they're going to continue to be huge constraints, not just on Ireland, but in all of the countries in the system. But there is a real palpable sense of people saying this is, you know, I hate using this term turning point, but people come up to you and actually say it, like, this is a great thing, it's a great achievement. And that's, you know, people volunteer that view to me.
But when they wake up on the 16th of December and when they wake up on the 17th of December, their life will have not changed that much.
We have to be realistic, that's true. It may not, it won't have changed massively overnight, that's true. But you know, a sense of a positive view about your own country's future is not a bad thing. It's not to be scoffed at, you know, in terms of people's future, their kids, their opportunities in this country. I think that's massive. And Ciara is absolutely right as well. What will define the parties, all of the parties in the next election, it seems to me, including the difference between us and Fine Gael, will not just be what Sean rightly says in terms of our participation in the recovery, but what we say about the future and what we say, for example, about health and how we do it and what we achieve in terms of health. I think these are
issues for all the parties. Just for a second on the issue of health. You essentially are now the person who has been landed with the task of ensuring that there's free GP care for everyone by 2016. Do you actually believe that that can be delivered, given the financial constraints in the Department of Health?
I think it can be delivered, and I certainly think that it won't be delivered if I spend all my time speculating about this date or that date or the other date. The commitment of the government is to achieve it. And what have I done? Actually delivered the first phase of that in terms of a government decision. Hasn't actually happened yet, but the government decision, very clear government decision to do it. And I read Pat, what Pat said last week. I just want to come back to him, just in a friendly way, if I may. The notion that this is a populist move. We will not be able to fund our health services under the current model. No country will be able to do it. This is not just about a once-off measure for families, welcome and all as it is for families. This is about reorienting and reconfiguring our health services into primary care. Otherwise, we won't be able to do it. In other words, Labour or Fine Gael or anybody else, we won't be able to fund our health services until we readjust primary care, and this is the start of it.
Pat Leahy, is this potentially one of the issues that the Labour Party is now hung out on, essentially, if they don't deliver this?
Oh, no, I think it's more likely, I'm afraid, that Dr. Riley will get the blame for failure to deliver on primary care. He might try to deflect some of it to Alex, but going on their respective records thus far, I think it more likely that the Fine Gael Health Minister will get the blame for it. There is, a danger, and it's another manifestation of what I referred to earlier, that as people become more optimistic, which, as Alex says, is probably a good thing, and politically there are certainly upsides for the government parties on it. We see consumer confidence increasing. That stimulates demand, and there is a strain in Irish politics which was most spectacularly demonstrated by the governments of Bertie Ahern, but not confined to them. That's sees electioneering as promising, and I think that there is a real danger for any party that makes the sort of unrealistic promises that you saw.
I agree with that. I think that's a lesson for all the parties.
Sean Sherlock.
The recovery is, this is about job creation ultimately, and if we go back to the so-called squeezed middle, the squeezed middle at present, have moved away from the Labour Party because their marginal income is virtually zero.
The marginal, just before the break, we were talking about this. The marginal rate of tax of 52% kicks in at just 33,000 euros.
No, we're not talking about tax. We're talking about their marginal income. Yeah. So that is the disposable income that they have after they've paid off their household bills. So, for instance, if a boiler breaks or they have to get a new set of tires, they just do not have that income. We have to start thinking about how we are going to create that kind of that surplus income for those people so that they can, you know, have those aspirations in relation to, you know, their children going to college and all of the other expenses that will come. A lot of those people are thinking about, you know, how they're going to fund, you know, childcare costs, how they're going to fund young adults going to university and so on. We have to think about that community and how we can, over the lifetime of this government, perhaps, you know, return something back to those people for the sacrifices that they have made.
Very quickly,
this is the political advantage of talking about tax cuts, which I suspect is one of the reasons why Labour has started to talk to them, because they are more believable to people. We will take 2 points or whatever off the rate of tax and put this much money back in your pocket is a more concrete and believable promise to people than we will provide free GP care at some point in the future.
Brian McDowell, the local elections next summer will be the first real test of where the Labour Party is at in terms of the public mood and public support for the party. And you spoke a few minutes ago about 12% in the most recent poll a week ago, 13.8% in the last local elections. What's the benchmark? What's the target benchmark of where you want to be next summer?
Well, I think, Brian, just to start off, I think something interesting has happened over the last couple of months, and it's been touched on a little bit this morning and this afternoon. The report as national organiser that I get back from each constituency, from TDs, from councillors, from the members, is that there is a mood change. Things have changed and there is a more positive mood among the electorate out there over the last number of months. They're more confident, I think, in the direction the government is taking and where they're going. And I think that's showing up on the doorsteps and certainly on the reports that I get back. Look, we're putting 150 to 200 candidates in the field. We will be running to win in every area that we put a candidate. We're not putting anybody up not to win.
What's the target? Where do you want to be? Do you want to be at 13%, 14%, 15%? Is there a target that you're aiming to get?
Look, we're halfway through a government where we've had to take a lot of hard decisions. In 2004, we broke 100 seats for the first time ever, and we were in opposition. You know, so, you know, in 2009, we got 130-odd seats. I don't want to speculate on the number of seats that we get, but we're on 12%. We want to consolidate the 12% and build on it, and that's what we intend to do over the next 6 months.
Ciara Conwy, when you look at where the party is now and when you look at where it might be in a year's time, what's your expectation of what Labour might be able to do in the local elections, for instance? That'll be the first big test.
Well, I think, you know, maybe you're wrong about it being our first test, because
it'll be the first nationwide election. It'll be the first national election where you'll get a national picture of what support for the party is.
I think what Brian says is right. You know, the Labour Party have a really core bunch of committed councillors who work really, really hard. We're known for delivering and doing the hard work in communities. And I think local elections are about local issues. And I don't think any councillor across the country need be hesitant to knock on any door because they've done the work. And I think it's right. There has been a mood change. And I would be very hopeful. We're undergoing quite a lot of change in my own constituency. We have the amalgamation of Waterford County and City Council, and by definition we've less seats now in that constituency than we had, so you know there's fewer seats to fight over. But I think the Labour Party will do very, very well because we have really good councillors who work really hard.
Alex White and Sean Sherlock, would each of you like to see a radical shake-up in government positions?
Why didn't you ask me that?
Well, the old cliche, Brian, I'm very happy where I am.
Yeah. Alex?
Well, I mean, I'm working very hard in the Department of Health. I'm only there a year, just over a year. It's a terrific challenge. And, you know, all this stuff about Angola and all the stuff people say about the Department of Health is not a bed of roses. Well, there's nothing in policy is a bed of roses. But, like, is there a more important area of work in public policy generally, let alone government, than the health and well-being of the people of the country and actually trying to ensure that people and their families stay
healthy? Would you like to see a big reshuffle?
Well, of course, there is no politician around this table that isn't ambitious. And, of course, in the future, things might happen. But I don't think things are going to happen that soon. I think there's stories around the place about reshuffles and so on that look pretty thin to me. I think that, you know, let's get on with the work that we're doing.
Ciara Conwy, do you think the party needs to essentially reshape and put out a whole new team before the next general election?
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go a whole new team, but I definitely think there could be a few tweaks here and there, you know. And particularly I think there's maybe an opening for a young woman, you know.
Can I just say I think Keira Conway would make an excellent minister. Can I just say that?
Pat Leahy.
Well, of course, politicians and those of us who observe them at close quarters love talking about jobs and reshuffles and that. The truth of it is that the vast majority of it goes completely over the heads of most people. I think there will be a reshuffle next year. That appears very, very clear for a start. The government has to make a nomination to the European Commission, and that will most likely come from among the ministers. So that's one change at least. I think we would
and
see.
And who would you expect to see there?
I wouldn't bet on such things, but if I was to bet somebody else's money on it, I would say Phil Hogan, but I have no special inside knowledge in that regard. I think there will be some changes to both parties' representations in cabinet, probably wider changes at the junior ministerial level.
Okay, before we leave today, we do exit the bailo on the 15th of December, but there's another, I think, important date somewhere after that, and that's, we understand that Keira Conway is due to get married on the 27th of December, just after Christmas, so I think everybody will give you their best wishes and on the road ahead. And
thank you, that's more stressful than a general election campaign, I can assure you.
And to Gary Horner, of course.
And to Gary, who's running in the local elections.
Well, there's a plug for Gary in the local elections, and you could always depend on someone like Alex White to make sure that he gets that plug in. Before we just leave, Alex White, I just want to ask you one more question in terms of health. How serious is the budget overrun? Just very quickly.
Well, I think there will be an overrun at the end of this year. It's not precise, not absolutely clear what that will be. I think that the big issue now is the service plan which the minister has. He's going through that. Government needs to go through it. And we need to fund the health services. It's an issue for all of the government, an issue for all of the people, not just the Minister for Health.
Okay, that's our lot from the Labour Party conference here in Killarney. A thanks to all our guests who contributed over the course of the programme. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back at the same time next Saturday, and I hope you can join us then. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Brian Dowling was produced by Peter Woods in Killarney and Peter Hegarty in Dublin. The researcher was Richie Byrne, the broadcast coordinator was Louise Denver, and sound supervision this week was by Michael McLaughlin in Killarney and Cara O'Hare in Dublin.